And now here is your moderator, Dana Rodriguez.
Thank you very much, Debbie, and welcome everybody to Minds Over Matter. Hope you are having a lovely weekend out there. We also hope you can spare us an hour of your valuable time tonight, because Minds Over Matter is an audience participation quiz program. So, of course, we want you to call in and participate. That's very important to us. Those two numbers are area code 415-841-4134. Again, that is area code 415-841-4134. Or you can call toll-free. Yes, we still have a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. That is 866-798-8255. It's been an interesting week, hasn't it? Yeah. I don't know. Hard to know what to say about this. It's an ongoing story, I guess. Anyway, so we can try to put that aside, at least momentarily. 415-841-4134 or toll-free, 866-798-8255. I do want to say thank you for those who took the time to join KLW and help support the station did that while our show was on a couple weeks ago. I don't have a list of the people that did do that, but I just want to say thank you anyway. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to our program. It means a lot to the station. So thank you very much for taking the time. I do know two people who did, my friends Tex and Munna, who I know are listening tonight. So I say hello to them and thank you for becoming members. All right. All that being said, just to remind you, we'll be taking questions and giving you questions on current events, movies, history, literature, geography, television, radio, and just about everything else. And I'm hoping that my two compatriots are on Zoom ready now. Are they? Lori?
You there? I am here.
Yeah, we're here. We're waiting for you, buddy.
Okay, great. Also want to remind you of our email address, which is mindsovermatter1@gmail.com. So that is MINDSOVERMATTER1. That is the numeral one. So that is mindsovermatter1@gmail.com. Feel free to email us any old time. I don't generally read them during the show, but they all get read. So if you have a comment or a question, just forward that, please. If you would like to hear us in the live stream, all you have to do is go to kalw.org, and you can find it there. And, of course, the lovely and talented Debbie is here tonight, and she will do her usual fine job of putting the podcast up at the end of the show, and that will be at kalw.org and a lot of other places, but start with KALW and forward. Okay, so we're going to start with the round of introductions and the round of questions. Here's the first, borrowing a line from a friend of his, Lori Fisher, wondering what kids will be wearing for Halloween, knows that the scariest mask this year will be no mask at all.
Thank you. I'll give my friend credit. Joshua Cosman has nothing against those doctors, but he sure would like a second opinion. Man, is that true?
And our moderator, Dana Rodriguez, is glad to start the new week. Karma took up all the room in the last one.
That's for sure. Man. All right. All that being said, we will start the questioning with Lori Fisher.
All right. So I have a question that combines, I think, the skills of Joshua Cosman and Dana Rodriguez, I hope. It's movie and kind of serious music. In 1962, and I'll give you some hints about that, the Academy Award for Best Scoring of a Musical Picture included nominations for Duke Ellington and Dmitri Shostakovich, and they both lost. I want to know what movies they were nominated for, and then who in the world beat them. So 1962, the Best Scoring of a Musical Picture Oscar nominations went to Duke Ellington and Dmitri Shostakovich, which impressed me a lot, but they lost. Who'd they lose to, or what movie did they lose to? And I'll give you, well, if you run the table, you run the table. Josh, what do you got?
The one I know is Duke Ellington, who did the score for Anatomy of a Murder.
That's correct, but that's the wrong year.
I thought it was the wrong year.
It didn't feel right. And therefore the wrong movie.
That was, Anatomy of a Murder was 59. So
yeah,
all right.
Yeah, three years later.
Then I got nothing.
Is the Duke Ellington movie by any chance Paris Blues?
Oh, it is. Give yourself a bell for that. Paris Blues is right. So we're looking for Shostakovich, and we're looking for what beat them.
And Shostakovich. 62. So did? Are you saying that Shostakovich did the whole score, or just they used pieces of his music?
I looked in the nomination. His was the only name in the box for best scoring for a musical picture. So That's all I know.
Well, he did plenty of films. But was this a foreign film?
Based on the title, I would say it is a foreign film.
Okay.
And then any guesses on what won in 1962?
62. So it's best overall score. And
It's called best scoring, and I know sometimes there's technical stuff, but that's, you know, I'm reading exactly what it says. Yeah. So it includes the whole orchestral score.
So this doesn't have to be a musical by any means.
It does not have to be a musical.
No.
So what's happening in 62? That's the year of Tom Jones, right?
Or that's Lawrence of Arabia, isn't it? Is 62?
No.
Yeah.
Lawrence of Arabia is 61, surely.
Oh, I thought it was 62. Well, all right, maybe. You might be right. I don't know.
Well, neither of those was nominated or won. So okay. You guys are better.
I'm just trying to situate myself. Right. I don't know.
Okay, we'll leave it out. So just repeat the question, Lori, please.
Best scoring of musical picture in 1962. Dana got that Duke Ellington was nominated for Paris Blues. I'm looking for what Dmitri Shostakovich was nominated for. It is a foreign film. And what won? And Dana asked whether it had to be a musical or not. I said it didn't have to be, but I also didn't say it wasn't.
All right. And Josh, you go ahead too, please.
All right. Well, I've got a musical question. I'll make sure to get this in while Lori's here. Who is the oldest and youngest currently living solo artists in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Whoa.
So a lot of people in the Hall of Fame as part of duos or groups, but I'm looking for just solo artists. Who is the youngest currently living solo artist in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? And who is the oldest currently living solo artist in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? The Oldsters, it's actually kind of a peloton of three. Any of those top three you can get, but the youngest one is.
Can you give us the age of the oldest and the youngest? Can you do that?
Sure. You want me to start out there, or I thought you might try and take a swing at it, but I can give you the ages. The Oldsters are 87, 82, and 81, and the youngest is 54.
The youngest is 54, huh?
Yep.
Oh, that's it. I thought it would be somebody younger than that. Mm-hmm. Okay. My guess on the oldest. I have two possible guesses. Dana, do you want to take the first guess?
Well, the youngest, is it somebody of the, like, John Bon Jovi generation, kind of?
Well, I don't know what generation he is. I mean, Bon Jovi, the band, is in the Hall of Fame.
Like 80s, but, you know, but like John 80s himself, stuff. You know?
Sure. Yeah.
80s, 90s, you know.
80s, 90s. That's exactly right.
But just because someone's in the band doesn't mean, like, John Bon Jovi's not in the
Right. I'm
Hall
looking
for,
I'm talking, he is, but as part of the band.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm talking about just people now who have been inaugurated as solo artists.
Right.
So my guess on the oldest, I have two guesses. One would be Fats Domino.
Fats Domino is no longer with us, I'm afraid.
Oh, okay. Then Chuck Berry would be my other guess. He's still with us, right?
He is not. No, he died last year.
Oh, he died last year.
You got to read the obits pages,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
You should have asked me last year. Okay. But yeah. I'm thinking
those are good guesses.
Okay. Then I think I know it's Jerry Lee Lewis. He's alive. Nope.
I don't think he is.
You know what? This is the one you could. I don't know if you're checking.
I may be wrong.
No, I think he actually is alive. Still alive.
And the reason I know. I have one claim to musical fame, and I'll tell our guests now. When I was in high school, my band opened for Jerry Lee Lewis, and I have followed his career, so he's the one.
All right, I stand corrected. You are right. He is still alive. I must have skipped right past him.
And is he old enough?
He is 85.
All right.
So he's the second oldest and second of now a group of four octogenarians. I should have included him.
I almost feel like I know him because we were on stage together for about a second.
So repeat the question, Josh, please.
So the oldest and youngest living solo artists in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the youngest is 54. No one else is very near that age. The Oldsters, there's a group of octogenarians. One is 87. That's the oldest one, at least I could find, who's still alive. Jerry Lee Lewis, I have been now reliably informed, is alive and 85. There's two more that are 82 and 81.
OK, Can I ask a question about all three of them?
Yeah.
Are they known like Jerry Lee Lewis as solo artists, or do we think of them also as part of a band? I know they all would have had backup.
I mean, there's no band that is associated with them.
Okay. So I got to tell you,
of the three, there's only one that I actually know much about. The other two are just names to me.
But it's more somebody like Linda Ronstadt or somebody who stood out as a solo
person.
Right. And are any of them women?
Of the oldsters? No.
How about the youngster?
Yes.
That kid. Okay. Well, that's okay. It's a 54-year-old woman. Okay. Yes. I'm working on that.
All right.
Okay.
And in the meantime, let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Ever Matter.
Hi, this is Bruce from San Francisco.
Hi, Bruce.
Okay, here's the question. It's a film question. I'm going to give you the names of some performers. They probably have a lot in common. But there's one very unique thing about their film careers. Lon Chaney Sr., Boris Karloff, Bela Lugosi, Vincent Price, Robert Mitchum, and Gregory Peck.
Well, the first three, I was going to say they were all in films with Abbott and Costello.
No, Lon Chaney Sr. was never with...
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. I thought you said Lon Chaney Jr. I apologize.
No.
Okay. So Lon Chaney Sr., Boris Karloff, Bela Lugosi, Vincent Price, Gregory Peck.
Yep.
And what was the last one? I'm sorry.
Robert Mitchum.
Yeah.
And what do they have...
So is this a kind of film role or film character they played?
No, it has more to do with the film than the character they played. It's a little bit difficult to, because the characters are different in the film. So
something to do with the titles of the, something to do with the titles of the film? Like a certain word in the titles of all their film?
Yes,
like
that's close, yes.
That's close.
So, all right. But it's not the same title for all the films. In other words, all the actors. There's not one title that brings them all together.
One title that brings them all together? No.
Okay.
But a word in the title might. Is that it?
That, yes.
How about the word knight or the word hunter?
No.
Okay.
Gregory Peck and Robert Mitchum.
Yeah.
So it has nothing to do with that. Peck and Mitchum were both in Cape Fear. It has nothing to do with that.
No, it does have something to do with that.
It does have something to do with that. Oh. Okay. Cape Fear. So fear, is fear the word?
No. I never said there was one word.
Oh, you never said?
Okay.
I thought you did. All right.
A name of a place? Kind of like the island of something? Do they all have that kind of thing?
No.
Okay.
So, wait a minute now.
Are we close?
Is there a geographical location that it's in the film title, like Cape Fear, that they...
No.
No. But Cape Fear figures into this?
Yes.
And since Peck and Mitchum are in the same film, I don't think Karloff... Lon Chaney Sr. is in a film with Karloff, Bela Lugosi, and Vincent Price.
I think Sr. died in 1930.
Yes. So can you give us some sort of hint on this?
I think any sort of a hint would lead you immediately to it.
Well, I could stand that being led immediately to it.
We enjoy that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm happy to be led immediately. Something.
Lead away.
Yeah. You better give me some sort of hint.
I better give you what?
Some kind of hint, or I'm not going to get it.
A giveaway.
I can't think of a way to give you a subtle hint that wouldn't just point right to it. I can't.
So it's in the title.
Maybe I'm not clever enough.
It's in the title, but it's not a role that they all played.
No.
And
does it name a place that? Right? Or location.
No, no geographical element.
Okay. So not Cape Fear like that.
And it's not like that. Okay.
It's not an anagram kind of wordplay thingy, is it?
No, I'm not that clever, no.
And it's has nothing to do with Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, but because Bela Lugosi and Vincent Price were both in that.
That's true, they were. But no, it has nothing to do with that.
All right. So, yes, then you better tell us.
Okay, here's the answer.
All right.
The answer is that all of these actors appeared in two movies that had the same title.
Okay. all right, let's see.
No, that's it. That's the answer.
That's the answer.
I can give you all the movies, but that's the answer.
So every single one of these actors appeared in, well, that's true, because Gregory Peck and Robert Mitchum were both in the remake of Cape Fear as well.
That's right.
Lon Chaney Jr. was in The Unholy Three.
No, Lon Chaney Sr.
Senior, I'm sorry, was in The Unholy Three.
That was both versions.
Twice, yes. Let's see. Vincent Price. Huh. Bela Lugosi. Well, Bela Lugosi. All right, go ahead. Fill us in.
Okay. Lon Chaney. We already did Lon Chaney Sr. was in The Unholy Three twice.
Right.
Boris Karloff was in two versions of The Raven.
Oh, good.
The 1935 and the 1963.
Right.
Bela Lugosi was in two versions of The Black Cat.
Oh, Vincent Price was in two versions of The Tower of London.
Yeah, you got it.
All right.
So that's it.
All right. Thank you very much.
There's one more. There's one more. There's an asterisk. Gregory Peck, who was in both versions of Cape Fear, was also in both versions of Moby Dick.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Thank you very much.
That's it.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Josh, I have a quick question. How about Madonna for the youngster?
No, Madonna is older than me. She's in her 60s.
That's older than
she's,
you?
Okay. Yeah. She's an old trout.
All right. Mm-hmm. All right.
Anyway, okay. Let me give you a couple questions here. All right. Lori, I'm going to just preface this by saying, if you did not read this question in the New York Times over the course of the week, that's fine. Go ahead and answer. If you did read it, don't answer.
Recuse. Yes. I'll recuse. Okay.
Thanks. So replicas of this famous piece of art can be found in these locations. So what I'm looking for is the piece of art. But these are replicas of a famous piece of art. They can be found in these locations. The Delaware Park in Buffalo, New York, Cal State Fullerton, Forest Lawn Cemetery in Glendale, Fawick Park in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and Ripley's, believe it or not, in St. Augustine, Florida. So replicas of this famous piece of art can be found in these following locations. Delaware Park in Buffalo, New York, Cal State Fullerton, Forest Lawn Cemetery in Glendale, Fawick Park in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and Ripley's, believe it or not, in St. Augustine, Florida.
You're asking for five different pieces of art?
No, I'm asking for one piece of art. There are replicas of this one piece of art in each of those places.
Oh.
On public display.
I am recused. All right. I did read it. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what that would be.
It's a famous piece of art.
I assumed that.
Yes.
How about American Gothic?
That's a good guess, but no. All right. So just once more, replicas of this very famous piece of art can be found in these locations in the United States. Delaware Park in Buffalo, New York, Cal State Fullerton, Forest Lawn Cemetery in Glendale, Fawick Park in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and Ripley's, believe it or not, in St. Augustine, Florida. Okay. Second question. What is the only primetime network show in history that had five periods in the title?
I love this.
What is the only primetime network show in history of US TV that had five periods in the title?
And they weren't in a row, right? It wasn't like an ellipsis.
Not an ellipsis.
Yeah. No.
An ellipsis?
No.
No, five actual periods.
Yeah,
so it could have been a Mr. and Mrs. with periods.
Oh, that's good. I was trying to think of like either five sentences or some stylistic thing like the stars in the asterisks in MASH.
Well, I don't know.
But okay. Mr. and Mr. Oh, it's got.
Are there abbreviated words in the title?
I don't think I'm going to give you any more hints.
Oh.
Yeah, no, it's got to be. It's got to be. So. Mr. and Mrs. and Doctor and.
Could there be four Mr., Mrs., Doctor, and Professor?
There's no Doctor in the title, I'll tell you that.
Okay, there's probably Mr. and Mrs.
So once more, what is the only primetime network show in history in the U.S. that has five periods in the title?
Oh, Josh, we should get this.
I know, right?
Yeah, well, you'd think. There's not going to be, it's not going to have a lot of competition.
Mr. and Mrs.
Well, think it over. And in the meantime, let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Ed. How are you?
Good.
Very good. So I have two questions. I'll do them very quickly. First one, what is a nuclear football?
Nuclear football is the container in which they keep the nuclear codes. They always are never more than, I think it's 20 feet away from the president with these
Very
codes.
Good. Very good. So I do have some concern with the current sad state of affairs with President Trump. That's pretty scary. So if you compare Hiroshima bomb, which killed pretty much really about almost 100,000 people, half about innocently, about the other half died within days or months after that. What is the largest nuclear bomb we have today compared to the Hiroshima one? It's scary. So that's part of my question, because I'd like to ask another question very quickly. 58 megaton, that's 3,333 times as big as Hiroshima. That means we are in big trouble if we have a nuclear war. Over 3,000 times, over 3,300 times just to do it. Okay, second question very quickly. So in ancient Egypt, for hundreds of years, they would let Asians come in the country, but a single, they forbid married couple of any kind. So this biblical figure entered Egypt with his wife, but he lied. He called him. He called her his sister. Which biblical figure was it was, or he was?
It was Abraham.
Clever guy, very clever guy, very clever. Thank you, very good. Thank you. But as always, there is a movie called Abraham. If you watch it, great movie, great movie. The rest of it, what happened? The Pharaoh fell in love with her, and tried to blah blah with her, and then God plagued him with some kind of disease. Thank you, guys. Always good show.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Hope you're enjoying the show. Our panel tonight, that would be Lori Fisher from Diablo Valley College, Joshua Cosman, music critic for the San Francisco Chronicle. I'm your moderator, Dana Rodriguez. And you're listening to us on 91.7 FM. That is KALW, your local public radio station. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hey, Dana. It's Megan in San Francisco.
Hi, Megan.
I have three geography questions that may seem unrelated but are thematic.
Well, we're not doing too well with the related questions so far, so we'll see how
it goes. All right. Well, let's go for it. What U.S. city shares its name with three U.S. mountains, an active volcano in Alaska's Aleutian Islands, the tallest peak in Montana's Glacier National Park, and a mountain in Vermont?
Ooh, good question.
Can you repeat it again?
Yeah.
Please.
What U.S. city shares its name with three U.S. mountains? And the mountains are an active volcano in Alaska's Aleutian Islands, the tallest peak in Montana's Glacier National Park, and a mountain in Vermont.
So is this would you call this a major city?
I would call it a well-known city, but not one of the, it's not a New York or a San Francisco or Los Angeles.
Would you, is this a city with a single word name?
Single word name.
And can you tell us if it's east or west of the Mississippi?
East of the Mississippi.
Okay. So can we assume that all these things were named after the city?
Actually, I don't know what the relationship order is.
And is this a Native American name?
I'm going to say no, but I can't say that with 100% certainty.
All right. Okay. Well, Josh?
I got nothing. I'm being cagely silent.
Oh. I'm with Josh on that one. Josh speaks for me. I got nothing.
I'll give you a hint. All right. The name of the city shares a name with a U.S. president.
Oh.
Last name.
That limits it.
Okay. Hmm. Is it Madison by any chance?
Nope.
Jackson.
It was, and let's drill into this hint. He was president twice.
Cleveland.
Yep.
Mount Cleveland.
Cleveland. Nice.
All right.
Good hint.
So the second question in this thematic trio is, what is the only city in the United States that has borders with two separate national parks?
Hmm. Mm.
And are these national parks both located in the same state?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And would this be east or west of the Mississippi?
East of the Mississippi.
Okay.
Kira would know.
Maybe.
Kira would.
Yeah.
Is this a well-known city?
Well-known city, definitely.
So, national parks. Would this... National parks, not state. Okay. National parks.
Is it in the South?
It is in the South.
This wouldn't be around Washington, D.C. You're not counting that as the South, is it? Are you?
No, it's not Washington, D.C.
Okay. Then South, okay. So would this be around, say, Savannah or Atlanta?
You're getting closer than D.C., but those are not the right answers now.
Okay.
Is it in Florida?
It is in Florida.
Okay. That's my contribution.
So is Everglades possibly one of the parks?
Everglades is one of the parks.
All right.
Okay. So now...
All right.
So is it Tallahassee?
No, nope. That's too far north.
Okay.
Everglades is south. So then, all right. So it wouldn't be, I'm trying to think how far south Orlando is. It wouldn't be Orlando, would it?
It is not Orlando.
Okay, but Everglades is one of them. And then Everglades is one. So it's not Miami. It's...
check yourself, Dana.
It is Miami, huh?
It is Miami, bordered by Biscayne National Park and Everglades National Park.
All right. Can't get myself a bell for that. I just backed into it.
I didn't know it went that far east.
All right.
You mused about it.
All right.
And the final question is, in what city was the radio station located that received the first FM broadcasting license?
Is this California? Is this KALW?
It's not KALW.
Well, we were one of the first anyway.
But is it in California?
It is not in California.
Oh, okay.
So FM. What was the call letters? Was there a K in the call letters?
There was not a K.
Okay, so that means it's the East Coast, right?
It is east of the Mississippi.
Okay. So did it have something to do with a department store? Like Montgomery Ward's had a radio station or Sears?
I don't know if it's affiliated with a department store. Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Was it affiliated with a college or university?
Nope.
Okay. Anybody have a guess?
Nope.
I don't.
All right.
I would think New York just because it seems to do that kind of thing, but I don't know.
Yeah.
How about New York?
I'll give you the hint that it's,
not New York.
It's closer. More centrally located in the country.
Okay. So someplace in around Chicago area. We're just guessing here. So
yeah, I don't know.
Actually, maybe you should just tell us.
Yeah, tell us.
Yeah.
This is
okay. It was in Nashville, WSM radio station in 1941 in Nashville.
Yeah, all right.
Nice.
So I think actually we're number two, or we're the first one west of the Mississippi here.
And now that we have the three cities, can you figure out the theme?
So Cleveland,
Miami, and Nashville.
Miami and Nashville, yeah.
They're all cities with sports teams.
Well, that's true. What's the
two
theme?
Of them had teams in the baseball playoffs.
Is it Cleveland, Miami, and Nashville that are the Kints?
The what?
Is it Cleveland, Miami, and Nashville that are the Hints?
Yeah, so they are the answer to a cult, like a Jeopardy question. If you ask the question, this would be the answer. Cleveland, Miami, and Nashville.
So
do they all have some kind of
Hall Cleveland, of Miami, Nashville. Those are where the presidential debates are going to be held.
You got it, Dana.
All right.
Nice.
Thank you very much.
That was a long time coming.
Yeah, that was a long time coming. thanks. And okay. Lori, if you had a long question, I would advise you to make it a shorter question, and it's your turn.
Okay. I think this has a short answer, and you might get it quickly or not. I can ask. It's about Seinfeld. And Larry David had a rule in the writer's room, and the rule was he did not want any of the characters to get have any moral lessons to be learned. So there were two rules in the writer's room that they had to follow. It was no blank and no blank. I'll give you a hint. It would be something like no smoking and no jogging, but those weren't it. So what two things could characters in the Seinfeld show not do? It was kind of humorous what they do. And I think these characters never did them because they would have implied some kind of morality or goodness to them.
So my recollection is that the phrase is no hugging, no learning.
You got it exactly right. It was a quick question.
Good job.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's perfect. No hugging and no learning. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
That was quick.
Josh, you have a quick, short question.
Are we going quick questions now?
Well, it's just because we have half an hour, and I don't want you to waste a long question. Let's put it that way.
I don't think of it as wasted, but all right, fine. I'll give you a short question.
All right. Okay.
I'm going to give credit on this one to Ken Jennings, the Jeopardy champ, because I stole this from his weekly, his weekly trivia email. I thought it was a good question for on here. The two top grossing directorial debuts in U.S. box office history were both horror movies.
Ooh.
What are they?
Well,
both horror movies.
Yep. The two top grossing directorial debuts in U.S. box office history were both horror movies. What were they?
One of them must be Get Out.
One of them is Get Out. You're darn right.
Good.
Right. Well done.
The other ones, I'm trying to remember if Friedkin did anything before The Exorcist. It's not The Exorcist, is it?
It's not The Exorcist.
Okay.
He did other things before
he
The Exorcist.
He did do something. Before
right.
He, yeah. Like maybe even Boys in the Band. Did he do that?
Oh, he did
maybe.
Do Boys in the Band. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it something that's relatively chronologically close to Get Out?
It's certainly closer than The Exorcist.
Okay. All right.
And I'll just mention Jordan Peele's name in case people were wondering who
Jordan Peele directed Get Out. Well done.
All right.
Is it
so
like,
something in the last 20 years, maybe?
Yeah.
Is it maybe like the Blair Witch Project or something?
It is so much like the Blair Witch Project that it is indistinguishable from it.
All
well
right.
done.
But I don't know. I can't.
No,
tell
exactly.
You the director.
Right?
Yeah.
No, none of us can.
All right.
Oh, okay. You don't know the name either?
No, I was hoping you'd know.
Yeah, not that one.
I do not.
All right.
No.
All right.
All right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Good evening, Sparky and Maddie. How are you all doing?
Good.
Hey, are you guys on the road or what?
No, we're still here, and thank you for that. Let's answer some questions first.
Okay.
The piece of art that you're thinking of, Dana, is it The Thinker?
It is not The Thinker.
Ooh,
that's
okay.
A good guess, though. I like that.
Oh, yeah, I like that, too. oldest Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, you're not meaning Little Richard, do you?
No, Little Richard sadly is no longer
among us. Yeah, he passed away a couple months ago.
Yep.
But another person that I may have in mind is Dion DiMucci.
That is correct. He's one of them. He is the youngest of that oldster crowd. He's only 81.
Yeah. And the youngest has got to be Janet Jackson.
That is correct, right?
Miss Jackson, if you're nasty.
Way to go, Sparky.
Yeah, and we just want to say, you know, through all these years, thank you for having such a great show. And we're going to be on the road in less than 2 weeks.
You want to tell them what the story?
Where are you going?
We are, we've been packing up and we are moving to my hometown or close to my hometown in Connecticut.
Well, you could still listen to the show from there.
Oh, yeah. We're definitely going to tune up your show through the miracle of the internet.
All right.
And we'll try to call in every so often.
Good.
Is this,
all right.
Is this because of the climate change or other things?
Yeah. No. There've been a lot of things, okay. A lot of circumstances, but mostly it was just we were wanting to just get, or for me, get back to my hometown. And of course, Maddie is who was 100% on board with it. You know, she's going to be leaving her beloved, lovely hometown to be with me. So we're going out there. We're gonna pack the cats and we're gonna hit the road, Jack.
All right,
great.
Good luck to you.
Thank you, folks.
All right,
Dana,
all right,
great playing through well. With you, Lori, Josh. You're all swell, and I'll look for your columns every so often, Josh.
All right, thanks.
Thanks. All right. All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
It's been lovely. So, bye.
Right,
Josh. I have another oldster question.
Go ahead.
If Dion's in there, is Del Shannon in there?
Del Shannon is not on my list, but now I no longer trust myself. Having,
yeah. I'm not positive he's in the Hall of Fame. I think he is, and he'd be Dion's age.
All right.
I don't know if he's dead.
I'll look it up while we're
okay.
In the
dead.
Meantime,
he's dead. He died in 1990.
Oh, yeah. I missed it.
In the meantime, let's repeat any questions that have not been answered yet. Okay,
right.
Lori.
Yes, in 1962, the best scoring of a musical picture. It had a Duke Ellington nomination for Paris Blues, but Dmitri Shostakovich was nominated for what? And in a much more familiar film in 1962, what won?
All right.
If you know who won for that, that's very good. And since we're a little past 7:30, I'll say it was a musical. That will be your hint for that.
And Josh?
The two oldest living solo artists in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm sorry, actually, no. The oldest at 87 and one other 80. Is 82. We already got Jerry Lee Lewis at 85 and Dion at 81.
All right.
All I got.
And let's see. Replicas of this famous piece of art can be found in these locations in the U.S. Delaware Park in Buffalo, New York, Cal State Fullerton, Forest Lawn Cemetery in Glendale, Fawick Park in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and Ripley's Believe It or Not in St. Augustine, Florida. So what is that famous piece of art in which you can, where you can find those replicas? Let's see. What is the only primetime network show ever on American TV that had five periods in the title? The only primetime network show on American TV that had five
periods in the title. I've got it.
All right.
It's The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
That is correct.
U-N-C-L-E.
Good job.
There we go.
Good job. Oh, the great. Man from U.N.C.L.E. There you
okay.
go.
Whew. Okay. How, Josh, how about one of the Everly Brothers?
You know what? One of the Everly Brothers is alive and well into his 80s, and I almost put him on the list, and then I said, no, I'm going to restrict it to people who are in there purely as solo artists. So he's a half-season.
I was sweating that one. I didn't realize it was
one
so
of them
nervous.
Is alive and one of them is not.
Okay, well, Dion is, you know, with the Belmont, so that's
right.
kind of a group.
All right.
Sorry, Dana.
And let me give you this question because it's I wrote it for Josh, so it's here.
Yes, thanks.
Let's get rid of this. And these actors, I'm going to give you the names of four actors. They all played historical characters, real people, who were title subjects of operas, okay?
Okay.
These four actors played historical characters, real people who were the title subject of operas. So, number one, Michael Wilding. You may remember he was married to Elizabeth Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, Richard Burton, who, strangely enough, was also married to Elizabeth Taylor. Three, Jack Palance. Mm-hmm. And four, Errol Flynn. So, These actors played historical characters who were also the title subjects of operas. Number one, Michael Wilding. Number two, Richard Burton. Number three, Jack Palance. And number four, Errol Flynn. So I'll give you, well, see what you can do with that.
Yeah, not much. I've only got one guess. I don't know anything about Michael Wilding except that he was married to Elizabeth Taylor. I didn't know he was an actor. I thought he might be the hotel magnate.
Well, let me give you a little hint on that, Josh. This movie comes up all the time on this show. Thanks to Ede.
Oh.
So it's Cleopatra?
It was not Cleopatra.
No, it's
it comes up all the time.
Well, that was
So that's
Ten Commandments. I don't know. Jack Palance, I only know from what's it called? City Slickers and his one-armed push-ups. But I think he played, didn't he play El Cid in a movie?
No, that was Charlton Heston.
All right.
Jeff Palance was in Shame, wasn't he?
He was, but that was not an opera.
No opera of Shame?
And he didn't play the title character. So remember, these actors played real historical characters who were title subjects of operas. Okay, so Michael Wilding, Richard Burton, Jack Palance, and Errol Flynn.
So the mention of Eve points me to Egypt, and that makes me ask if you're thinking about Akhenaten?
That is correct. I am thinking about it. And that is the name of the opera as well. And who wrote that opera?
Philip Glass.
Correct.
But what's the movie?
The movie is Akhenaten. That is the name of the movie.
I've never heard of that movie. Yes. All right, good.
All right, good job on that.
Did Richard Burton play Mark Anthony? And was Mark Anthony a title character?
He did play Mark Anthony, but it is not. We're not talking about Mark Anthony, actually.
So there's no Anthony and Cleopatra?
There is an Anthony and
there
Cleopatra
is an opera.
And in
Anthony
fact, there's going to be another one.
And Cleopatra. But that's a two-person title. So this is a one-person title.
Oh, well, that changes everything.
Yes.
So what did Richard Burton play? George and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
No,
that's all I know.
Not that. So remember, it's a single-person title.
Right. No, I understand. Yes. But it's not necessarily the title character of the movie, right?
Yes. In this particular person, it is. So Richard Burton, that would be both the title character of the film and the title character of the opera.
Burton played Hamlet. Is it that?
It is not Hamlet.
But isn't there an opera of Hamlet?
There is an opera of Hamlet. But he didn't play Hamlet in a film per se. It was not exactly. No.
Yeah, it was that TV, kind of that theater version.
TV
so you're
version.
Not you're not counting that.
Anyway, think it over and we'll take a call. Hi, you're on Minds Ever Matter.
Is that me?
It is you.
Okay. Well, I called with four related questions, but I do have a correction, and I have two answers if you want me to spend that much time on the phone. The one correction is Stephanie Powers was the girl from Uncle.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Another title.
That's a very – thank you for that. That's a perfectly valid – so, I have to look that up to see if they had the five periods in the title as well.
Yeah.
Interesting. You're probably right, though. Okay,
all right.
Good job.
So today is the 50th anniversary of what event?
It, 50th anniversary.
Let's see, what would that be? 1970?
Yes. And what is it? It's October 4th, 1970. Oh, I saw this, I think.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
How is it? Oh, Debbie suggested Hardly Strictly, but.
No.
Okay. That was just wishful fulfillment on her part, I guess. Let's see. So can you frame it in any way for us?
Well, the first thing I'll give you is it's very strongly tied to San Francisco, but it actually occurred somewhere else.
Wait a minute.
Something to do with LSD or anything like that?
You're getting close.
Getting close.
Is this a use of marijuana?
It involves use of recreational drugs.
Is this like a smoke-in or, a demonstration to get together and smoke marijuana?
No.
Okay. But it didn't take place here, but it's tied to San Francisco.
Yes, it has a very strong tie to San Francisco.
All right.
Huh. I need a hint.
And it's nothing to do with any sort of gay or lesbian history?
No, I don't. That would not. I don't think so. I wouldn't characterize
All right.
it that way.
Okay. Okay. Well, I rely on your judgment on this. So, let's see. 1970, October 4th. Has this been repeated many times? Is this sort of a yearly ritual?
No, not at all.
All right.
So just something happened. Is it a political or more of a cultural? Give us some context there.
It's more of a cultural event. It relates more to arts and culture than politics.
So more like a love-in or something like along that lines?
No.
Okay.
But it's related to recreational drugs.
Right.
Okay.
And it's also related to San Francisco.
Oh, was it the first acid test?
No.
Okay.
Josh. It happened somewhere else.
I got nothing.
All right.
We don't know.
Should I try to give you another hint?
Okay, give us one more hint. We'll see.
Okay, well, it's related to the music of San Francisco.
So,
was it the opening of a venue or the first appearance of a San Francisco-ish group?
Okay, you're getting closer with the San Francisco group. It involved a San Francisco musician, use of a drug on this specific day in a different location from San Francisco.
All right. So is it anything to do with the Grateful Dead?
This musician was part of the same. The reason this is associated with San Francisco is because this musician was part of the contemporary music, San Francisco music scene at that time.
Right. All right. We're just going to be guessing. So I guess you better tell us.
Well, since you mentioned Grateful Dead, this musician is referred to in the song Trucking.
I'm a terrible person to
know anything
about. What a long, strange trip it's been,
yeah.
Right?
Whatever happened to Sweet Jane? She lost her sparkle. She isn't the same. Living on Reds, vitamin C, and cocaine. All a friend can do is say, ain't it a shame?
Yeah. Do we know who that is? Is that a real
person? Janis Joplin.
Janis Joplin.
That was Janis Joplin.
Oh, I never knew that.
I didn't know that either.
Huh.
Yeah.
Did she die on this day?
Absolutely.
Oh.
In Los Angeles. So then I have three related questions.
Well, you better pare it down to one. Let's put it that way. And it's not that we don't want to hear the other two, but it's just we want to give other people a chance to get on too, because we have some calls waiting.
All right. What poem was featured at the heading of the Rolling Stone article on her death?
What poem was featured?
Yeah, so there was a Rolling Stone cover story on her death, and at the beginning of the cover story, they featured a poem.
Don't know. What would it written for the occasion or something well-known?
No, it's a well-known poem.
Mm-hmm. Is it Allen Ginsberg poem, a contemporary poem like that? Like
no, not at all. A traditional poem.
Very true. Okay.
Death Be Not Proud.
No.
But is it something more of that kind of classic?
Oh, ilk? Debbie suggested something to do with Rose.
Well, I'll give you, I can give you a couple of good clues. And maybe you can let me ask another question or not. But it's a four-line poem, and the first line has become part of the vernacular.
I don't know. Is it a humorous poem, or is it a serious four-line poem?
No, it's a serious four-line poem. But the first line of the poem is part of the vernacular.
You better tell us. I'm sorry. We're
Should I tell you that it's by Edna St. Vincent Millay?
Oh. I wish that helped more, and I'm certainly familiar with Edna St. Vincent Millay, but not her poetry.
I am too, but not a four-line poem.
Yes.
I don't.
So, no, I'm sorry, I don't.
My candle burns at both ends. It will not last tonight. But all my foes and oh my friends, it gives a lovely light.
Nice.
No, of course.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so should I move on at this point?
Yeah, it's nothing personal. And you're welcome to call back next week. It's just that we have to take some of the other calls too.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And you're listening to Minds Over Matter, and we're here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Two numbers to join us. Yeah, just give me a second.
No, go ahead. Yes, sir.
Area code 415-841-4134 or toll-free 866-798-8255. Yes, Josh.
In the interim, Lori and I have been chatting in the Zoom chat window, and he reminded me that Errol Flynn was in The Private Lives of Elizabeth and Essex with Betty Davis, which would make him the title character of Donizetti's opera Roberto Devereux.
That is correct.
So that was a joint, that was a collaborative effort.
And using chat, very nice, which you can't do.
Very good.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
good job.
So who's left? We're left with
Richard Burton and Jack Palance.
All right, Jack Palance.
Yes. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Tom in Southern California.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. I was just going to guess Errol Flynn. I was going to guess Robin Hood.
Oh.
I figured there's probably a Robin Hood
opera. That was my first thought, too. But I'm sure there's a Robin Hood opera somewhere, but I've never come across it.
Yeah. Hmm. Or Don Juan.
Oh.
I would think there might be a Don Juan opera.
Is there a
Don Juan? There's Don Giovanni by Mozart.
Right.
There you go.
Anyway. All right. Go ahead.
But, okay. The best score, was that maybe Maurice Jarre for Lawrence of Arabia?
No.
Should have been.
No.
Should have been. Okay. I'm not positive that's the year, but that didn't win or nominate.
Right here. Okay. Some of the oldest rock and roll people.
Mm-hmm.
How about Van Morrison? Because he's sounding pretty old.
He's old, but he's not in his 80s yet.
Not
that old. He was born in 45.
Or Eric Clapton, maybe he's.
These are now you're in the immediate baby boom post-war baby boom generation.
Yeah.
We're looking at people who were born in the early to mid 30s.
Well, I figured 81, 82, but did you get all those? Okay. The piece of art replica at Forest Lawn and Ripley's, is it maybe that Marcel Duchamp's urinal?
No.
Excellent guess.
Good guess.
Shoot. Okay. And then let's see. The one question I have is Ian Fleming. In his mind, he had a certain famous person's looks as the basis for James Bond. Who is that person?
Seems like I read this.
And he actually mentions this in two of the books also.
That he looks like such and such a famous person.
Is it an actor?
Yeah.
Is it an actor?
The person was in a number of movies and acted, but not really known as an actor. Did win an Oscar. But not for acting.
So not Sean Connery.
No.
Should have been.
So this person was in a number of movies, but is not best known as an actor.
Right.
And they did win an Oscar, but not for...
not for acting.
Not for acting. Yeah. Did they win for screenwriting or direction?
No.
Were they in documentaries? Is that what their kind of movies they were?
No, not primarily.
And this person was better known for not being in the movies, like being in political world. Okay. And this person would have been famous in the 50s. Is that or earlier?
Famous then, but also earlier.
This person
probably
looked
more famous
like
in the 20s and 30s.
Oh.
This person look anything like Sean Connery?
Not really. I wouldn't say.
20s and 30s. But in the movies. But won an Academy Award. But not...
How do you win an Academy Award?
How do you win an Academy Award? For is this person a composer or a art director or a fashion designer?
Yeah, songwriter.
A songwriter.
Oh.
Is it
Hoagie Carmichael? It is Hoagie Carmichael. Very good.
Wait, James Bond was fashioned after Hoagie Carmichael? That's pretty cool.
Well, looks-wise, he mentioned it a couple of times.
That's hilarious.
Hoagie Carmichael does not look like the suave James Bond, at least to me. And I love Hoagie Carmichael.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Question.
All right. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello. Hi, it's Hayes from San Francisco.
Hi, Hayes.
I have to be quick.
Yes.
And the old fellas, what about Thunders or Willie Nelson?
Oh, Willie Nelson.
Willie Nelson is not that old.
He's 82.
Is he?
Oh, sorry. No,
but I don't think he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
But maybe he's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I think he's not. He's in every.
Okay, the other thing I want to say is that Ede was very short tonight. That's amazing. I hope he takes that. That was the other thing. I've got a very quick question.
Very, very quick.
Jitschweg, what does that mean? It's to do with playing games.
Say it again, please.
Zugzwang. I'm a terrible pronouncer of German.
Zugzwang?
I'll tell you the answer. It's when you have to make a move because you're going to lose anyway, but you've got to make a move.
Right.
Yep.
Josh, you know this?
You guys are doing great. I know you have to wrap it up. See ya.
Oh, all right. What did he mean? What was it, Josh? What was the word?
In chess, the word Zugzwang is a position where you have to move, and any move you make is fatal. If you could sit there and do nothing, you'd be fine.
And what a great word. What a great word.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Ace.
One feels it often.
Yeah.
All right. Time to clean up here. I'm sorry if we didn't get to your call. If you're waiting online, we'll try to do better next week. Lori, what do you have?
I have the best scoring of musical picture. Dmitri Shostakovich was nominated for a film on Kovin's China. And the winner for best musical score was West Side Story with Saul Chaplin and three other people. And one quick guess for Josh, Leslie Gore, is she old enough?
Okay. She's not. And
she's in the Hall of Fame. I'm pretty sure.
I can't remember if she's, I thought she had died recently. Yeah. I don't want to say that with any confidence. No, the oldest living person is Lloyd Price, the New Orleans songwriter, and also Duane Eddy is still kicking at 82.
All right. Replicas of this famous piece of art can be found in these locations. I won't give you all the locations anymore, but it was the Statue of David.
It's a great story, too, behind that.
And the actors who played real historical characters and were also title subjects of operas, the ones that nobody got. Richard Burton played Alexander the Great in a movie called Alexander the Great. And, of course, Handel had his opera Alessandro, correct?
Yep.
And Jack Palance played Attila, as in Attila the Hun.
Oh, of course he did. There it is.
And Verdi had an opera called Attila. So if we didn't get to your call, I do apologize. Please remember that Minds Over Matter is here every Sunday at 7 p.m. My thanks to our panel. That would be Lori Fisher from Diablo Valley College, Joshua Cosman from the San Francisco Chronicle. Thanks to you both. I've been your moderator, Dana Rodriguez. My thanks to Debbie Kennedy, who handled the board and phone tonight. And above all, our thanks to you. Thanks for being patient on the line. Like I said, if we didn't get your call, please call back again next week, and we will get to you. All right? Thank you, everybody. We hope you have a great week, and take care. Bye-bye.